Get ready for Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by TruPrep. For all your prepping needs, visit TruPrep online at truprep.com or visit a TruPrep store in Roswell or Marietta. Listen in as Doug and Amy provide helpful tips on how to get ready for anything that comes your way. And now, your hosts, Doug and Amy.
Welcome, everybody. You're listening to Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town. This week, we're going to be talking about the implications of an economic collapse and the way that the loss of reserve currency status would affect the United States, our way of life, and really everything that is to come. Given the nature of our show, how we're, you know, the emergency preparedness people, how we're trying to get you guys ready for everything that may come, we're going to talk about some of the disasters that could befall us that would set us back a few decades or maybe 100 years or so in the way that we do our normal everyday lives. If you think about what we're up to today, you know, we live a fast-paced modern life where our lives revolve around instant information, instant communication, It's like that old country song, I'm in a hurry to get things done. The problem is that may not be our lifestyle forever. And I think one of the reasons that we have such a modernistic lifestyle right now is because America is the reserve currency for the world, that we have cheap imports, that we can get things that we want, and that it makes our lives much more advanced. One of the things that always comes to my mind is I enjoy with my kids watching British comedies. But when I would watch the British comedies, you'd watch them, and I don't know if you've ever seen them, Amy, but you'd watch mm-hmm. these shows, and I always thought, my goodness, these things are from the 70s. You know, if you look at the wallpaper, mm-hmm. if you mm-hmm. look at the carpet, mm-hmm. they were 70s.
Yeah, I think I know what you're referring to. Yes.
And then I would see the date at the end, and they mm-hmm. were 1997. Mm-hmm. And they were 30 years back. And the reason for that is that they have a different standard of living based on the fact that their imports are so much more expensive than imports are for the U.S.
And we really are spoiled rotten.
Yes.
I mean, just, and we don't know it, I think, as a whole.
Well, you know, you've got people who, you know, are driving around in $60,000, you know, luxury SUVs.
You speak for yourself.
That have a brand new cell phone that's mm-hmm. worth $600 or $700 that they got for free because they signed a contract. The mm-hmm. reason that we have the access to these sorts of goods is because we're not really paying what they cost. The fact that the dollar is the reserve currency for the world. And what that means is that every country keeps a certain amount of foreign currencies as backstock. And the idea is that if a country's currency is seen as weak by investors, these investors could make a run on that currency to try to drive the price down and then make a killing on it. In order to prevent that from happening, countries keep a store of, you know, hard currency in their, or gold in their backstock, and that if a run were to happen, they could then start buying up their own currency reserves with the hard currency that they keep in their financial institutions, thereby thwarting any chance to create a run on the currency. And back in 97 and 98, we saw a financial flu go throughout Asia as speculators made a killing by crashing currencies one after another through Southeast Asia up towards Japan. And the way that the lessons learned was to keep a deep stock of foreign currency. Now, the currency to keep and the currency that is used to trade oil and a lot of other of the foreign markets is the dollar, the U.S. dollar, because it is backed up by the most powerful economy on earth. And if you try to make a run on the dollar, you're going to fail because the economy of the U.S. is so strong. Unfortunately, things are changing, and people are starting to notice that we are head over tails in debt, and mm-hmm. and it's increasing all the time.
Now we are. I was waiting for the punchline there. Actually, I was kind of.
Yeah, the problem with the U.S. market right now is that we're not insolvent. You know, people say, well, you know, we're $14 trillion in debt and we're runaway debt. And that is true. But think about the U.S. economy as a whole. If you think about it like a family, I mean, our economy is producing more than $14 trillion a year. So if you think of our debt as credit card debt, that's terrible. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you had your entire year's wages as credit card debt, you would be in trouble. Mm-hmm. But I wager to bet that most of our listeners have several times their yearly salary as mortgage debt and don't think mm-hmm. a
that's
thing
pretty.
About it.
Yep.
Well, what makes the difference between credit card debt and mortgage debt? What is the main difference between the two?
One is the I would imagine it would be the interest rate.
Right. Credit card interest rates are 20, 25, 30%. Mortgage interest rates are 4%.
Yes, big difference.
Right. So now let's look at what the interest rate on the debt the U.S. is paying. When we talk about $14 trillion in debt, what interest rate are we paying? It's around 3%. Mm-hmm. So it's much more like a mortgage. And as a mortgage, our debt is not that bad. Now, would it be better to be debt-free? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, that would be, well, maybe not absolutely. Everybody needs to have a little debt, even especially countries, because it allows people to invest in the country. By, you know, issuing T-bills, it creates stability, gives a common place that you can have a standard for exchange in the bond market, and it creates a baseline. So it's good to have some debt always coming out of the government, but you don't need to have $14 trillion worth of debt, and you don't need it to be keep going up every single year. So that's causing some instabilities. Is it enough that people are going to try to make a run on the U.S. dollar? No, because our economy is way too large to be able to do that. We have way too much money out there for anyone to be able to manipulate our markets that way. But as we're going forward, we're hearing rumblings out of Russia that they may start to dump T-bills. We hear noises from China that they're going to back up Russia, the whole Crimea incident, things that are going on globally. World War III may be fought economically rather than being fought militarily. And if that's the case, if China dumped all their T-bills, if Russia dumped all its T-bills, Russia alone could put us into a depression. China could destroy us. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because having that many T-bills flood the markets, the only way that we could sell new ones would be to up the interest rate. And if we started to up the interest rate on our treasuries, we would get to a point where we were no longer having a mortgage, we'd be having credit card debt. And at that point, the whole system crumbles. And what's going to happen if we cannot make our obligations to our T-bills, if we start to lose our credit rating, which we've already slipped once?
Yes, we have.
If we go down that road, what you're going to see is other countries say, hey, you know, I've got a huge reserve of cash, U.S. dollars, that I'm going to use to buoy up my currency if it was under attack. I don't think the U.S. dollars is the best way to do this. Maybe I want to change to renminbi, which is the Chinese currency, or maybe I want to change to yen, or maybe the euro seems more safe at this point. Eventually, they will decide, and there's going to be a huge market fluctuation, and nobody's going to know what's going on, and there's going to be runaway inflation, and you're going to see the price of goods go through the roof, and then things are going to settle down, and there's going to be a new world reserve currency that everybody is going to take and assume and put in their piggy banks for the day that trouble comes, and whatever country is issuing that currency, that country will then have the benefit of being able to buy things very, very cheaply on the international market, and it will no longer be us. Now, let's think about the things that we import in this country. We import, number one, fuel. Now, we provide about 80% of our own fuel needs, but we are importing about 20%, and that is a massive 20% of the fuel that we're bringing into this country. So just take and let's think about what other countries pay for fuel. When I lived in Dillingham, we paid $8 a gallon. You know what? That's cheap. That's cheap. In Europe, they pay an adjusted price of about $8 per liter. Per liter of gasoline.
What does that average to be per gallon?
There's a little bit more, but it's about 4 liters to a gallon. So you figure that, you know, 4 times 8.
$32
a gallon for fuel. Now, how does everything get moved around in our country? Everything travels by truck.
Yep. Yeah, big 18-wheelers.
And those 18-wheelers are going to be sucking down $32 a gallon fuel. So what's the price of the increased price of moving goods? Everything that you have to truck in is going to have to account for the cost of the fuel. So you're going to see prices go through the roof.
In every item, I would imagine.
Including
our food.
Yes, especially food. But things that are made locally, you wouldn't see that so much. I mean, there's going to be an increased cost for using commercial farm equipment, but that's a very small portion of what you see in the farm food dollar. So that wouldn't take off. But what's going to happen is as the price of fuel goes up to the point where it becomes an impossibility to ship things long distances, regional markets are going to open up, and then you're going to be dealing with homegrown foods solely. When you talk about southern comfort foods, that's what everyone's going to be eating around here because that's what you can grow around here. You're not going to have wheat flour. It's going to be a luxury to buy wheat flour. You're going to have cornmeal for everything.
Right.
You're going to see cornbread rise as being a staple. You're going to see a small animals that can be butchered and locally done be a lot more popular. Now, mm-hmm. we're fortunate here because we have a good climate for raising both beef as well as hogs and chicken and other small animals. So as long as there's, you know, electricity, and electricity is fairly cheap in this country because we don't run it off of fossil fuels. We run it off of coal, which the U.S. is the Saudi Arabia of coal. We have more coal in this country than anywhere on Earth. So as long as we're doing things with coal, it's cheap, it's local, it's efficient, poof, we're good. Now, of course, the EPA is shutting down coal plants left and right, which is going to make an impact on the price we see. If nothing else happens, if everything goes fine, we're still going to see an increase in the price of electricity because instead of using cheap local coal, we now have to use natural gas. Now, we have a lot of natural gas, and that's a decent alternative, especially if you're going to be doing things like converting vehicles away from gasoline to an alternative fuel. Liquid propane, natural gas, is a great way to run a vehicle's engine on something that we can produce locally and not have to import. But that's also more expensive than coal. So no matter what we do, we're still going to have these price increases. But if we lose our reserve currency status, if we go into this kind of free fall where we are on the open market like every other country with no advantage over the market, you're going to see increased prices on everything. And how are you going to cope with that?
Yeah. Well, you bring up some very good points. And the thing that's coming to my mind is looking into the crystal ball, do we have a Great Depression, on the way, or what does that equal out to? So I tell you what, let's take a quick break, Doug. We'll come back. We'll talk about, you know, what that's going to look like for us in the future, and what does the past maybe have to do with that. So you're listening to Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, the Talk of Town. We'll be right back.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back. You're with Ready Radio, listening to News Talk 1160, the Talk of the Town with Doug and Amy. And we are all about emergency preparedness. And today we're looking at, what it would look like in the past if we were to go back to the 19th century living. And we're talking about a couple of things to start off with, a couple of items that might throw us back in that direction. And one of the things that, Doug, you were just talking about would be something that could possibly lead us to a financial collapse.
Well, the problem is that we're in a very uncertain economic time right now. Russia and the U.S. are at loggerheads in a way that we haven't seen since the Cuban Missile Crisis. But my fear really is that this next conflict is not going to be fought on the battlefield. It's going mm-hmm. to be fought in the mm-hmm. marketplace.
That makes sense.
And we have become so interconnected with all of these other countries economically. I mean, it's Adam Smith's ultimate dream that we would become interconnected to a point where
right.
war becomes obsolete.
Mm-hmm.
But war is never truly obsolete because now mm-hmm. they have the ability to strike at us financially.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have to launch a single missile. They don't have to send a single troop. All they have to do is sell off their U.S. Treasury bills. And that would cause a ripple effect that would hurt our economy. And it's strategic warfare. It's going to cripple our ability to do things in the world because we are going to have a loss of funds.
What would that look like for us, though? I mean, would it look similar to a Great Depression?
Well, to start off with, you'd see the Fed start to move manically, trying to head this off. And what they would do is they would start to basically print money to try to keep ahead of what's coming out of the country that's dumping it. Now, a small country and a single investor trying to do this, you couldn't do it. A small country trying to pull this off would be very, very difficult. And all we would need is one or two allied nations to join in helping us, and we could wipe it off the map. It would be no concern. But we've been at a point where we've had quantitative easing for so long now that we've been printing money after money after mm-hmm. money that we're already stretched. And if Russia dumped its T-bills, then they would have the potential to cause inflation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what we would see happen is that the value of, now, Russia, it would hurt Russia, too, to do this. Or if China got involved, it would hurt them terribly because they would be basically burning money. That's the end result of this, is that these countries have, it would be just like if you and your husband had a big savings account
mm-hmm.
and you wanted to get back at him. So you took your mm-hmm. half of the money out of the savings account and burned it.
Yeah, I can't see that happening, but
well,
I understand your point.
The idea is that it hurts you
mm-hmm.
more than it hurts him, because right. he still has his half of the money.
Right.
But the hole has dropped down so much that it hurts everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And if they think that this is a winning game, then, or if they have enough reserves of other things, if they've been preparing, mm-hmm. and they have been,
mm-hmm.
they have been preparing. There was news articles out in 2008 when Russia attacked Georgia, not our Georgia, but
right.
the other Georgia,
yes.
that Russia was clamoring to create a new reserve currency. And China started talking about a new reserve currency. But at that time, George Bush was in office. We were pretty economically secure, and it didn't go anywhere. Everyone was afraid of the idea, because if we start to try to move away from the dollar, you become vulnerable again. And what if? And everyone is really afraid of China's currency as a reserve currency, because their government manipulates their market so drastically that they could create a huge advantage over any country that went to the renminbi and trying to create that sort of reserve status. So it didn't go anywhere then, but now we're in a lot has changed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're in a point now where we've had so much money printed. Look at the price of gold. Back in 2008, price of gold was around $300 an ounce.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's over $1,200 an ounce. The price of gold has not changed. It has not changed one iota. All that's changed is the value of our dollars mm-hmm. purchasing it. 1 ounce of gold used to be able to buy you a really nice suit back in 1899. In 2001, an ounce of gold would buy you a really nice suit. Today, an ounce of gold will buy you a really nice suit. Gold hasn't changed. Mm. The value of the gold hasn't changed. The value of our money buying it has. And if you start to look at that in a world currency, that means that all of those countries that had amassed dollars as a reserve thing, suddenly they've lost 75% of their value.
Mm.
They have lost all that money. Now, in some ways, this is a fantastic magic trick, because it takes money from the savers and it pushes money into the pockets of spenders. Think about it. If you put $100 in the bank and you had the value of your money decreased by 75%, you really only put $25 in the bank. But if you borrowed $100 and then you waited until the value of the money crashed, and then you go back to pay the money back with cheaper dollars, you only had to pay back $25 of the $100 you borrowed. So the act of inflation takes money out of rich people's pockets
mm-hmm.
and puts it into poor people who are borrowing in debt. It puts it into their pockets. It also affects currency manipulators. If you understand what's going on, you take out a huge loan right before, you take that money and buy hard goods, you then sell the hard goods at a profit, pay the loan back with the inflated dollars, and you've made a killing. I mean, that's what happened during the Great Depression. You mm-hmm. saw inflation take off, and the people who knew what to do, they became the business magnates of the next 100 years. You know, the people who were, you know, Oldsmobile and places like that, they invested heavily, borrowed cheap dollars, paid them back with cheaper dollars, made a killing, became an empire. That's the way that the Great Depression changed our lives in a fundamental way. It was only ended by World War II. And we could be going into that sort of situation again, where we would have high inflation, where you'd have people losing their shirts, all the investors would be out, it would be a complete changeover, it would be a revolution. It would be a revolution in the way this country is managed and run. The winners would be the people who bet heavy on the country's collapse.
And so what are the warning signs that something like this would be imminent or I guess close to happening? And if those warning signs were to appear, what would our steps be that we would take?
The biggest warning sign would be things like Russia announcing that they can bury us economically, and China abstaining from votes on the Security Council, and us imposing sanctions on individual Russian dignitaries and political leaders.
At least seven of them, right?
And then Russia turning around and imposing sanctions on U.S. senators.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all of this shows that they're not willing to go to war. They're more interested in fighting some kind of economic battle. And it could be big.
Yeah, so we have the warning signs now.
Now, what do you do to combat this? Well, if you're planning on having inflation, the best thing you can, or if you're thinking that you might lose reserve currency status, the best thing to do is to buy up things that are going to be expensive afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Such as?
Anything made in China. Anything made in China will become incredibly expensive after a loss of reserve currency status, because the only reason we get it so cheap now is because we are the reserve currency.
Mm-hmm.
If it changes, we will no longer be getting it cheap. So that stuff, you could see a huge increase in price. Fuels will go up, but there's no way to hoard fuels in such a way. You would see that a increase in the price of gold, but not as dramatic, I think, as you would see in electronics. Hmm. I think that gold would probably go up 20 or 30%, but electronics might go up 50% to 100%.
Really?
So that might be a decent investment, but the problem is that there's no escaping. I mean, this is not, if we lose reserve currency status, we will never get it back. Mm. It is gone forever. So it's not just, okay, what can I do to exploit this? Because if you were a millionaire or a billionaire, you could do things to exploit it and increase your wealth if you really believed in it. Mm-hmm. But the question is how are you going to live after this is over? Because the world will change. The world will be fundamentally different the day after, and it is not coming back.
What about people's 401ks and investments that they're currently sitting on? Well, what would happen to those?
You would see a devaluation of the currency, which would cause those investments to not be worth what they seem to be. For example, you know, if you put away $100,000 today for retirement, mm-hmm. is that a lot or a little?
I guess that's a loaded question.
Well, in today's market, just as things are today, with nothing else in your
mind. $100,000, I guess, if it weren't earning anything.
Right.
I don't think there'd be very much at all.
Let's go back to the late 1960s. If you put $100,000 in the bank then, is that a lot or a little?
That'd be quite a bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you think about, and this is just my weird way of knowing what things are worth, a Corvette in 1970 mm-hmm. cost about $4,000. A Corvette today costs $60,000. Right. So you can see the value, the value of the money has changed. So let's say you've got, you know, 50 grand or 250 grand or $500,000 in your 401k. Cool. After the collapse, that 50 grand, you know, maybe it'll buy a half of a car. What good does it do you? Yeah. So you're going to see a huge decrease in the amount of the ability of people to retire, which actually is probably a good thing in the new economy, because we're going to have to work longer in order to make things here because we won't be importing them. You're going to see a big shift in the way the prices all work for jobs. People are going to be working for less real money. They may be earning more, but they'll have less buying power from their dollars. And so people are going to have to work harder, work longer in life in order to maintain even a modicum of the standard of living. And it will not be like we have now. You're not going to be able to have the electronics we have unless we start making them here. And we can't, because all the rare earths that we would need to make complex electronics are coming out of China. So we're going to be really hamstrung in what we're able to do. Folks, I know we're coming up on another commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the electrical grid and what a collapse of the electrical grid would look like and how it would affect us. And then we're going to start talking about how things can be if we had to live without any of these conveniences. You're listening to Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. If you're just joining us, we're talking about things as far as emergency preparedness and what might throw something in our way that would completely change our way of life as we know it. And we've been talking about a financial collapse and something that might, you know, possibly bring that about. And there are certain things, Doug, that you were saying that there was a certain amount of things that actually would remain the same in our daily lives, and other things that would change.
Well, you know, the as opposed to like a solar flare or an EMP that we had talked about on a previous show, the advantage of an economic collapse is that everything is still going to be working. Now, it may be a lot more expensive to operate, but everything will still work. I mean, you're still going to have the same buildings. It's not going to be like a war. You're still going to have all of the electronics. It's not going to be like an EMP. It's just the cost of everything is going to go through the roof.
And so what I would I guess something that I'm sort of imagining is, you know, if something like this were to happen, I'm assuming some people would lose their job. Some people just, it wouldn't be worth it to go to work. Instead, it would be, more a better use of your time instead of, you know, working to save enough money to buy like a $10 can of beans than it would be to maybe have a small garden or, you know, to be more self-sufficient.
Exactly. And a lot of the food you're going to see is going to be locally grown. And people who live in the country are going to be a lot better off because they have the ability to grow their own victory farms. I mean, have you ever heard of victory gardens?
I don't think so.
Back in World War II, in order to increase the food supply, to be able to ship it overseas for troops, and to have more people working in factories, everyone was encouraged to grow a garden in their backyard, to till up their yard and grow a garden there so that they would be providing some of their own food needs all the time. And that's going to become prevalent. Everybody who has a yard will start growing things. And all of those backyard chicken ordinances that they say, you know, you got to pay $150 to have your chickens, that's all going to go out the window. Mm-hmm. People are going to say fooey on any regulation that means that they can't provide for their own family. So you'll see a lot of individuals starting to provide for their own caloric needs on a daily basis. The other thing you're going to see is a lot of people quit their jobs because, you know, if it costs you, let's say you've got a moderately fuel efficient car, you get 20, 25 miles to the gallon. You live 50 miles from your work. That means you do 100 miles a day. That means you use 4 gallons of gas a day, which means that you're making $10 an hour, you work 8 hours, you make $80 without including the taxes, but the gas to get there now costs $128.
Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, so everybody stops moving to go to work because it just doesn't make sense. And then you're sitting around home with nothing but time. How do you make it valuable for being there? How do you keep from losing things? Well, you're going to have to start doing something that provides more value than you would be losing going to work, and that means farming.
Yeah, I'm kind of feeling a chaos going from point A to point B, though. I mean, from you know, we have things, and you know, let me tell you, when I have my Chick-fil-A that I'm used to stopping by every single morning, and when I can't afford that any longer, or I'm not going to work. I mean, there's an adjustment period there.
You're going to see a whole bunch of businesses shut down for a couple of weeks, just plain flat out shut down, because the trucks will stop rolling because the truckers aren't going to move if they're not going to make money. There's going to be a huge amount of contract disputes when people say, "Hey, I ordered X and I paid X for shipping and I expect it to be here," and they're like, "Well, you know what? I don't care because I can't move it for that. And I can't charge the next guy enough to make up for what I'm spending to move the product to you. So you're just not getting it." And there's going to be this like huge social collapse where all of our regularly running oiled machinery of getting product from A to B just in time. You know, Walmart, their whole theory of products is called just in time. And what they do is their entire store sells out in 3 days. If you walked into a Walmart today and put a sticker on something and came back and looked at it 4 days later, it would be gone. All of it. If you did it with every product in the store, all of it would be gone because they sell the entire store out every 3 days and restock the whole thing.
It's impressive.
It's just in time. They bring in just enough product to just get it through, to just be there so nothing is waiting on the shelf, and they have high enough turnover that they can turn a profit on low margins. But what if when that stops, 3 days, all gone, everything's gone, and people will start buying up things like mad because they'll be looking for bargains. You know, they've got, you know, $500 in the bank. They start to see prices on things. Why? Let me ask you this, okay? Why do you buy a house right away? Other than that, you need a place to live.
Why would I? It would be all about the price, I would imagine.
Yeah, and what happens if you wait? Let's say you waited.
Oh, I'd be afraid somebody else would snatch it up if it's such a great deal.
And what if, why not just wait another year to get one? What happens to housing prices every year?
Oh, well, they go up. Well,
right. Yeah. And that's the idea. That's why we have inflation all the time. We always have some inflation to motivate people to be a consumer society. Because if you knew that X product was going to be the same price today, tomorrow, and in 10 years, you have no motivation to buy it today. You can wait until you've saved up for it. There's no reason to use credit to buy something. Why do you use your credit card when you don't have any money in the bank? Because you found a great deal. So you're going to use the credit card to get it because it's never going to be this cheap again. Well, you know what? When we hit runaway inflation, nothing will ever be this cheap again. And people are going to go crazy trying to stockpile anything they can because their money is dribbling away right from underneath them, right out of their savings accounts. It's disappearing. The purchasing power is disappearing. I mean, we've seen a little bit of that just with quantitative easing, but people haven't really caught on to the fact that they're losing money every day.
Yeah.
So we haven't gotten that rampant, you know, speculative buying. But when you start to actually be able to physically see the value of your money decrease daily, when it's not just a couple of cents worth of gas, when it's 50 cents worth of gas, every day you see the gas price go up 50 cents, when you start to see that, there's going to be a huge influx of people trying to soak up as many consumer goods as they can to hold on to them. And it's going to cause havoc throughout every sector of society.
And people are living paycheck to paycheck, more so now than they have been.
Ever before, yeah.
Yes. And the thing is, I mean, there's not a lot of savings out there. And you know, you do mention when you see your savings dwindle. I mean, what are, I'm seeing this spark, you know, just absolute chaos because if people don't have their savings and there's only a certain amount that they have to live on. I don't know. It's just, I mean, it sounds like the base for a good movie.
People going rampant. You know, you get the rioting. You get people looting, tearing down, burning things. It's almost like they dropped a bomb, but they didn't even have to expend the gas to fly the bomber over.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Well, how can you know if it were to get that bad, how could things crank back up and get rolling again?
Well, society always rights itself. I mean, that's human nature, is that after we come together, and I've seen the worst in humanity, but I've seen the best in humanity just in my own life. People do pull together and start to find people of common ideology, of common goals and values, and start to work together. And, you know, you and I may have different feelings about religion or politics, but when I say, you know, hey, I'll come help you swing an axe and chop up that tree. Come help me with my fence because I can't lift it all on my own. And we work together and we get the work done and we start to build relationships again. We start to build a community again based not on just happenstance of where we live or based on, you know, of something else, but based on true need for each other, that we need each other to accomplish our united goals. That's when trust gets built. That's when communities become strong. Good fences make good neighbors. And that's when you're going to start to see the balkanization of this country. What's going to happen is that regions are going to become strong and independent again. And there's going to be less dependence on large out-of-area entities.
Yeah. Well, I wonder how much time it would take to actually reach something along those lines and
In the small scale, it probably wouldn't take very long.
You don't think so?
I mean, in a major metropolis, yeah, there's going to be problems because you can't be sustainable. But go 100 miles out to the country. And there, you know, yeah, you're going to see a huge upheaval in that they're not going to be driving into the town anymore. But on the family, you know, farm, on the homestead, on the, you know, the 5 acres and a mule sort of area, yeah, they'll just start pulling together and make things happen there.
Yeah, well, how would this work with Atlanta? I mean, you know, if Atlanta experienced like this mass exodus, you know, and I'm just kind of playing devil's advocate here, but just kind of, you know, and these are, you know, this has really gotten my imagination cranking, and I'm very, you know, Doug, I got to tell you, I'm a very right-brained, you know, artistic type of person. So as we're speaking, and you're looking at me like, yeah, duh, but. But, you know, so as we're talking about all these scenarios, I mean, it's like a movie playing in my head. I'm like, oh, but what if this happens? And then I can see this really happening. And then I can see Atlanta just shutting down.
And
this mass exodus, yes, and the chaos and the looting and the rioting. Let me tell you, there is a big difference. But, you know, when the Great Depression happened to today, with us, the way that we are spoiled, rotten brats, and I say that lovingly.
I think you're being a little harsh on the city dwellers here because the Great Depression happened rather gradually. It wasn't that the stock market crashed in April of 29 and the next day nobody could buy anything.
Good point. Yep.
It was that a year later jobs started drying up, and 2 years later a third of the people were out of work, and 3 years later it wasn't getting any better, and 4 years later Roosevelt started to hire people and spend government money just so there'd be money in the paychecks, and 5 years later then they were wondering what is going on. Well, maybe we should stick the course out with the same president. And 6 years later, then, you know, you start to see economies in Europe take off under fascist dictatorships. You know, that was the pattern of the Great Depression. But when we're talking about rapid runaway inflation in a modern era, you're not going to have a year of adjustment as people slowly lose jobs and things shrink. It's going to be suddenly tomorrow nobody can drive.
Right.
Well, you know, in 1930, not being able to drive wasn't that big a deal. Nobody drove 80 miles to get to work every day. Nobody did back then. We're coming up on a commercial break, so hang in, folks. We'll be back to blather on more in just a minute. You're listening to Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, the Talk of the Town.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back, folks. You're listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. Amy has been egging me on in this conversation all the way through today, so we're going to try to keep it a little bit more focused in this last segment to give you guys a glimmer of hope in all of this dreary economic news that I've been spouting off and doom and gloom, because it is not all doom and gloom. There are bright sides, and if we lost our reserve currency status and nobody was able to get but, you know, maybe one laptop per family every 10 years, and you made your big screen TV last the next 30 because you couldn't afford another one coming out of Japan, there are still some upsides to this, which are really going to be good for us as a civilization, because we're no longer going to be focused on a consumer lifestyle. And I think that that is the biggest problem with America today, is that we are consumerists to a core. But when this changes, if we lost our reserve currency status, and I see that as a very high probability, if not in the short term, in the long term, definitely, because of the rampant spending and our unsustainable debt, if we get to that point, we're going to have to change who we are as a nation. And you know what we're going to have to become if we're going to survive at all? And I don't mean flourish when I say survive. I mean exist. If the United States of America is going to have people living in it still, we are going to have to go back to a Jeffersonian vision of yeoman farmers who are making their own way in life, who owe nothing to the government, who owe nothing to a corporation, but who raise their own livelihood by the sweat of their brow and the force of their hand to reap from the earth a living. And if we go to that point, if we get to where everybody is having their farms in their front and backyards, where they till, where they keep chickens in their third of an acre lot, if we get to that point and people are learning the true meaning of value again, then we can rebuild and we can become a nation that is great, not just a great power nation.
So we're looking at ultimately the big picture as being self-sufficiency.
It would have to be. Mm-hmm. As we look at all of the difficulties in getting there, I mean, it's going to be hard. There's going to be everybody in an apartment is not going to be able to do this. You're going to have land. Now, fortunately, America has an awful lot of land that is not used. And if gas prices went through the roof, those big farms, those big ConAgra, Monsanto, giant farms out in the Midwest, you can't run those if you're paying $40 a gallon for fuel. You can't turn all of your corn into ethanol to try to keep the tractors running to plant the corn to make ethanol to run the tractors.
Mm-hmm.
So
cycle.
Eventually it'll be dawn on people that, hey, yeah, I'm a part of an agricultural co-op and I've got 10,000 acres. I can only really farm 40. And people from the cities are going to have to learn to become country folk again and turn those farms into self-sufficient plots, family farms, small entity farms that can be worked by a family of four or a group of eight who can get those 40 acres plowed and planted and harvested. And if you take the millions of people in Atlanta and New York and Boston and Chicago and spread them out, then yeah, there are enough people to work farms like that, even using rudimentary machinery that doesn't require much gasoline. Even if you're just have a Shetland pony and an ATV plow and you're doing it in your backyard, you'll be self-sufficient enough that you won't need all of these imports. The United States is the breadbasket of the earth. We make food like other countries make oil and things that we want. We will always have something to export, and we will never go hungry in this country. The trick is that we have to learn how to make do without having to use other people's stuff to get us there. And once we're at that point, we're going to be in good stead.
Yeah, and I mean, this sounds tricky. This sounds very tricky to me because, you know, again, I've got this whole, you know, movie playing in my mind, and Doug just gave me the big eyes. I forgot where I was going with that. So, you know, I'm thinking right now, I mean, a lot of this is like a lost art. So I'm thinking for our listeners today, you know, some of the things that you can do now to prepare for something like this. First of all, educate yourself.
Learn.
Oh, my goodness. You know, I mean, if you've never grown anything, you know, get a little pack of seeds. And, you know, even if you don't have a large yard, I mean, just some container gardening off of a deck or something like that. But just learn the process.
Canning. And now, you know, we're talking about a financial collapse. We've abandoned the grid problems, kind of. But, you know, if there was a grid problem, you wouldn't have refrigeration. With the financial collapse, we're still betting on having freezers
Hopefully.
And fridges and everything that you kind of need to keep a modern lifestyle going. It's just going to be too expensive to be able to drive around or to be able to import things. So, yeah, you know, you'll still be freezing some vegetables. You'll be able to, if in your area you raise cattle, you could get a side of beef and butcher it and put a side of beef in your freezer and it'll be okay. You could can it. You can learn lots of things like that. But what's going to be important is that your area is making things that are locally, so you can supply your needs there. You're going to have to grow corn. You're going to have to grow food. You're going to have to do things locally, and you're going to see a resurgence of small town life. I mean, right now, who goes to town hall meetings? Nobody. Mm. Who cares? Because honestly, city ordinances don't affect our lives very much. Mm-hmm. Our big concerns are federal taxes and what the big guys in Washington are doing. That's going to change overnight. And your local politics and the way things are done locally are going to matter instantly when something like this goes on.
Yeah. So kind of and backtracking just a little bit to, you know, learning how to be self-sufficient and doing the farming, you know, you as much as you wish, you know, to plant a little seed and to have some tomatoes the next day, that's not going to happen. So I would also suggest to our listeners, if you're looking to prepare for a situation like this, is to go ahead and stockpile some food and just to keep yourself sustained until you can reach sufficiency.
You're going to have to figure that it's going to be about a year before you start to get real meaningful harvest.
And that's if you do it right.
Yes, and that's if you know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But
you're
going to reach out to people who do know what you're doing, because it's going to be life or death.
Mm-hmm.
And people are going to have to work together.
But it's a lost art. I mean, you know, it's finding them. Yeah.
The people who know mm-hmm. are going to be the new rich, wealthy aristocrats mm-hmm. of society, because they know how to do this mm-hmm. and they're going to be of value to you. And I can guarantee you what you're going to see is people who come up and say, you know, you're doing that wrong. And if you guys, you know, you want to give me, say, 10%, I'll show you how to do it so you don't lose the whole crop. And you know what? People will jump at it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it comes time to pay the piper, 10% is better than having lost the whole thing. But the person who had the knowledge is going to be rich.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Filthy rich.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know that you know, True Prep, our sponsors, they have at True Prep in Marietta, they have some different classes going on. So I know a lot of, you know, there are different aspects as far as emergency preparedness. And the one we're talking about today is kind of the extreme. If we were looking to prepare for a long time, you know, emergency type of a situation.
It's easy to talk about the get home bags mm-hmm. and, you know, first aid if you get, you know, serious wound, or the stuff like Les Stroud does on Survivor Man. That's kind of simplistic. And when you start to think about what could go wrong, and when we're talking about an economic collapse of this magnitude, mm-hmm. you know, what you're going to need is more than just a simple bag or
yes.
simple that. You're going to need skills, supplies, talents, equipment that no other emergency preparedness store offers in Georgia. Nobody is out there doing, you know, the grain mills and the canning supplies and the heirloom seeds and the knowledge on animal husbandry like True Prep. Nobody does that, because it's easy to market and say, hey, you know, there's a snowstorm, come get a bag, you'll be safe, you'll feel good about yourself. Or hey, buy a month's supply of food from us and you'll feel good about yourself. But you know what? In the middle of a Great Depression, that month's worth of food isn't going to amount to much. That bag
yes.
isn't going to mean much.
It'll go quick. And the thing is, you know, you do have family and friends, and one of the things, you know, just personally, you know, this is something that I'm very passionate about, obviously, and I do have some family members and friends that aren't necessarily, you know, preparing for your situation, and I've got a bleeding heart. And the thing is, you know, when you really do need a lot of people in a community for a situation like this in order to pull together, because let me tell you can't do it all.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, and you're going to see, I think another thing that's going to change is the family dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
The nuclear family, mom, dad, 2 and 0.5 kids living together, self-sufficient, going to work, that sort of thing, it's going to change.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see grandma and grandpa living there. You're going to see mm-hmm. close friends bonding together and coming and living under one roof. You're going to see a different way of life as people need labor to be able to make ends meet, as people need support, as people need love
mm-hmm.
to be together and to be a part of something bigger than themselves. You're going to see a lot different changes happening to families. And, you know, there's probably going to be some social backlash from that. I mean, people don't like to think about society changing in the terms of what love means
mm-hmm.
and what a family is. But those are important things that will adapt to a new world.
Yeah, and leadership roles, I think, are definitely going to change, you know, within the family. And we have migrated so far from, you know, from how things have been, 100 years ago or 200 years ago. And I can really see us kind of backtracking to our roots and kind of picking up some, you know, some of that tradition and putting that into play.
I invoked the spirit of Jefferson a few minutes ago, but Amy, do you think that we are still a pioneer people?
At heart, maybe. I don't know. I think there's so much that we've lost.
I think that the ember's still there.
You think
and if,
so?
If we can rekindle it, then we might be a mighty people again. Folks, thanks for listening to us. We're coming up to the end of an hour. Go to trueprep.com. Look at their webpage. Check them out on Facebook. Check us out on Facebook and on Twitter and on all the other our webpage. You can go to readyradio.net. Send us an email at info@readyradio.net. We appreciate all of you listening. We'll be back next week with a special guest, Survivor Jane from Twitter, the leader of the Prepper Talk every night on Twitter, will be with us, talking with us live in the studio. It's going to be a fun time. This is Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
You've been listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by TruePrep. For all your prepping needs, visit TruePrep online at truprep.com or visit a TruePrep store in Roswell or Marietta. Tune in each week as Doug and Amy get you ready for anything that comes your way. Ready Radio, Saturday evenings at 5, only on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.